Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Al Franken podcast. We've got a great one today for a change. Elizabeth Drew, someone who has covered three now impeachment processes, Nixon, Clinton, and now we're in an impeachment inquiry. And so she probably knows more about impeachment than anyone except Julie Eisenhower. And it'll be close. Did you know that I have a Nixon bathroom?
Oh, I'm trying to think of what that would consist of.
It consists of three photos that my brother, who's a photojournalist, took when he was about to get in the helicopter. And he was doing the V's.
The two V's, yes.
Yeah. And so he took three pictures, which are interesting because you see kind of what the posture of the Fords are and the other people there.
Well, that's a great scene.
Yeah. So I got three of his pictures from that. I have a letter from Elvis to Nixon that he wrote on American Airlines on the way to the White House. And it is the craziest letter you have ever seen. It, among other things, he wants to be an FBI agent.
Isn't it Elvis who got his way into the White House?
Yes.
Without an appointment, he got in to see Nixon, something like
that. Yeah, not only that, he was carrying guns.
Right.
And they took the guns away from him, they thought.
Ah.
But he had one gun when he went into the Oval Office, and he wanted to be an FBI agent because he knew the drug culture. He knew them or something, and also communists. He was very aware of their existence and wanted to help.
He was going to shoot them if he found them in the Oval Office.
Communists. He brought the gun as a gift. It was gift for Nixon.
For Nixon to shoot them.
I remember once I can't remember what this is about, but I always, if you were in the New Yorker,
right.
I read you. And I think I called you up at this time, and this was a while back, and you wrote a great piece about something, and I apologize. But it was long, and I remember calling you up to tell you how great it was, but also like, yeah, could you write them longer? Do you remember that?
Let me forget it. You always, that's how you identify me. She's the one that wrote that long piece.
But they were so good. You wrote the book on the Nixon impeachment, I would say. For anyone who wants to know all about and wants to know in a riveting way about the Nixon impeachment, Washington Journal, reporting Watergate, Richard Nixon's downfall.
Right.
It was spectacular, that downfall. I mean, and he deserved this. So today, the reason I asked you to be on, one, you're a brilliant, always been a brilliant writer. Two, we're friends, but mainly because you're brilliant. But also because you have, you wrote the definitive work on the Nixon impeachment, but you're reporting on Clinton,
mm-hmm.
and now you're writing on Trump.
Right.
So I feel like if we're going to talk about this impeachment, and it's sort of moved into a different gear, you're the person to talk to.
What's impeachment for? The founders put it into the Constitution because they didn't want a king. That's why we fought the Revolution. And they wanted a way of holding a president to account between elections. that you don't wait 4 years or 3 years. A lot of people think Trump should go down because every day he's there, you know, he's dangerous. There's something he might do. So it was a way of holding a president to account. They picked it right up out of English law. It had been written to hold to account the Stuarts, which goes way back, and their ministers. And they felt that you had to be able to hold a president to account between elections. That's what it's for. And they gave the House the power of impeaching or, you know, conducting the indictment and then the conviction in the Senate. And it's a very serious provision of the Constitution. And what the White House is doing is flouting the Constitution. That's very serious. An impeachable offense need not be a crime.
Right, and a crime need not be an impeachable
offense. Exactly. Trump had no government experience. He knew nothing about it. Nixon had been in the House, in the Senate. He'd been vice president for 8 years. So he understood government. He was interested in some of it, not interested in other parts of it. And he also understood the law. Now, he broke it, but he was no fool. He knew what he was doing, in a sense.
Like when he broke the law, he was aware that he was breaking the law. Okay.
And when they obstructed to a point, but he obeyed the Supreme Court decision. He obeyed, you know, he mainly obeyed subpoenas. It was not like this all-out blockade. We will not even let you do your process, which is huge. I mean, people are sort of gossiping about it. I think it's a constitutional crisis.
Simply because they're just stonewalling to the nth degree,
right,
as opposed to even Nixon.
Nixon let his own people go up and testify. His whole White House staff testified before Sam Ervin, and they didn't keep anybody from testifying.
Were they still staff when they testified?
Yes.
Well, that's right. So Haldeman and Ehrlichman testified?
Yes.
And they were still staff
John
then?
Dean, yes.
Dean wasn't a staffer.
I don't think he was at that point.
Couldn't have been. I remember when Nixon let go of Haldeman and Ehrlichman.
Oh, he cried. You know, he was always calling his staff to see how he had done, how they thought he had done. And he made the speech saying, "This breaks my heart. It's so terrible that I have to let them go." And he called up Haldeman after and said, "How did I do?"
Okay, he wasn't a people person, is what you're saying. He wasn't a people, and yet
warm and fuzzy, he was not.
Yeah. I just, writing about, how did I do in the speech where I talk about firing you?
Exactly.
Because such a liability,
right,
that I can't possibly keep you around.
Well,
how did I throw
people out in order to stay in myself, you see.
Yeah, and that didn't happen because he had violated law and he tried to stop them from hearing the tapes. And now, you have said to me that the tape wasn't it. Right.
By the time this tape was discovered, towards the end, it was a little excerpt of a tape that they had tried to hold back, because it showed him ordering a cover up, of having the CIA call the FBI and say, "You're jeopardizing national security." They always say that when they're trying to keep somebody from doing something, and that was the last straw for a lot of senators. I think mainly, the House Judiciary Committee, which was very well run, unlike the current one, had already voted 3 articles of impeachment. And it was known that they were going to go through the House. Mm-hmm. So he was already in very deep trouble. And what that little piece of tape did was say, people were, you know, they talk about looking for the smoking gun, and I called it looking for the smoking gun in a room full of smoke. I mean, obviously, something, you know, quite wrong had happened.
Where we are now, although I think we found a smoking gun.
The president announced the smoking gun in front of the White House. I mean, we've never had anything like this. He said what he did.
You're talking about China
and Ukraine. He talked about Ukraine. He said, "Yes, I thought that they should help us. If we were helping them, they should help us."
Yeah, so what he wants to do is make the smoking gun to his supporters not a smoking gun.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? Why shouldn't I ask an ally to help me out? You know, the fact he was asking him to help him out to bloody a political opponent, that's problematic. It's actually illegal.
He should have asked Zelensky to walk on Fifth Avenue so he could shoot him.
That's right. That would have been better. But Zelensky was, we're talking about the president of Ukraine, and he was a comedian, of all things.
Yes.
And a producer,
I think that's not a good idea.
Well, I don't know about
public life.
I don't know about next year, but you know, we could talk about that another time. I thought he handled Trump extremely well when they had their joint press conference. Can I go back over something? There are a lot of myths about Watergate.
Sure.
And one of them is about the cover-up, the original cover-up.
Yes. Are we talking about the cover-up of the break-in, or are we talking about the cover-up of all the other stuff he was doing?
Well, that's the point. He had these goons called the plumbers.
Right.
And what saved the country is they were total clods. I mean, they messed up everything.
Love the word goons, by the way. Yes. It's one of my favorite words. It's underused.
They were definitely goons, so they should make you happy. And you can read about the goons when you read the book. They messed up everything they did. And actually, when they got into the Democratic National Committee headquarters, here is the thing. This was the fourth time they tried to get in. People don't know that. They went in once. They had staged a dinner in the Watergate Hotel, so they'd be in the building, and then they were going to go up to the DNC headquarters. Somehow they ended up locked in a closet. Don't ask me how, but they got locked
in a closet. Why, you idiot. How did you get me into this?
That's right. They got up to the headquarters,
yeah,
and they didn't have the right thing to pick the lock.
Well,
so one of the Martinez, these were Bay of Pigs veterans, and Nixon told them that he'd brought them up to hunt out communists, you see, because they had been against Castro. They were trying to overthrow Castro in Cuba. Martinez went down to Florida to get the right equipment to get in to the DNC headquarters. They got in over the Memorial Day weekend. They actually were in there before the time that they were caught. But they messed it up. They put the tap on the wrong phone, and they took pictures that were all blurred. And it said that one of the two ex-CIA guys who were running them, took the material to John Mitchell, who was then running something called CREEP, the Committee to Reelect the President.
Why do you do that? Why would you go like, that spells creep. Leave it.
Maybe nobody knew how to spell. Anyway, and Mitchell is alleged to have said, well, that's junk. I doubt that that's the word he used, but you know, go back in and straighten this out. And that's the time they went in and got caught. But it was their fourth attempt. Now, but what the cover-up was really about, Nixon was in Key Biscayne with his buddy, B.B. Rebozo.
Right.
He liked him because he didn't talk, and so they would sit there in silence on their friend's boat and do nothing. Anyway, he came back 3 days later, and he was talking to Haldeman. And I noticed in the transcript, Nixon said, well, about the plumbers.
About the plumbers.
It's that other stuff they were doing.
It's the other stuff I'm worried about.
Well, this is really important. This is where Nixon, the lawyer, was, you know, smarter than most people.
I went to Duke.
He was very good. He could have gone to Harvard, but the parents couldn't afford the...
I could have gone to Harvard.
The cost.
Like the Kennedys. But they were born with a silver spoon in their... I'm sorry, Elizabeth, I'll shut up.
Anyway, where was I? Nixon, the lawyer, understood that they're having these goons, having gone into the office of the psychiatrist...
Ellsberg psychiatrist.
Daniel Ellsberg, who had leaked the Pentagon Papers, which is where this all began. Mainly Henry Kissinger, but also Nixon, were very hysterical that the Pentagon Papers got out. What was the problem? There were analysis of the Vietnam War under Johnson, but it was still continuing, and it sort of questioned the whole enterprise. So they were furious that this was published in the papers, and Dan Ellsberg had leaked them. So they were after Ellsberg. So yes. The goons went into a private citizen psychiatrist's office, and they were looking for his psychiatric files, which weren't there. Because, as I said, they cased it and thought they were there, but they weren't there. That was what Nixon thought was far more serious and far more important, and I agree with him. Nixon and I agree on this point, than the Watergate break-in. And that was what he was afraid would be found out, and that's what the cover-up was about.
I wonder what he thought he'd find in those files, even if he got it. Be like a lot of things like, well, he has lots of anxiety about releasing Pentagon papers. worried about
like his mother,
Nixon.
You know, who knows? You know, but they just wanted to smear him. Anything went. I don't know that Nixon ordered them to go in. He did, you know, suggest some very wacky things like starting a fire in the Brookings Institution.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Okay, so now let's compare the three impeachments. And we don't have an impeachment yet here. And do you think we are going to?
Yes, I do. Because with all this obstruction, what they can do. First of all, the phone call to the president of Ukraine where he did do a quid pro quo. I mean, his defenders, who are about two people on the Hill, say that wasn't a quid pro quo, but it was. It's on paper. Anyway,
he didn't say, listen, you have to investigate the Bidens if for me to give you the money
Here's
for the tanks. I mean, he didn't say that, but he said
Here's
just as much.
Here's what he said. I mean, the Ukraine president said, you know, we want to buy more of this, we want more of that. And Trump said, but we need a favor from you, comma, though. That though is very important. And it's a quid pro quo. You generally have to be, you know, just huge.
That is as quid pro quo-y as you get.
Right. Everybody
if you're a
got
professional.
It. So that's there, and his calling on China is there. They don't really need more evidence. It's there. This is why, because it's not cut and dry crime, this is why people say, well, it's political. But, you know, it's a judgmental call. You know it when you see it. When you see a president flouting the Emoluments Clause, I go back to this. Speaker Pelosi thought the reason to go with the phone call is that everybody would understand it. I'm not sure everybody does that this was a quid pro quo. Everybody understands him enriching himself.
I think they understand a shakedown. I think I think that Americans listen to
that
and look
well
at that, and they go like, "Okay, he didn't say, you know, you have to do this in order to get the money."
In effect, he said it,
but he did.
Yeah.
By the way, I have a pack now, the quid pro quo pack, and the way we answer the phone is quid pro quo. What can we do for you?
What can you do for us?
Well, it's implied, you see. There is no quid pro quo here at quid pro quo.
Al, it was about this country trying to become a democracy under attack by Russia. And it so happens Trump's good friend, Vladimir Putin.
And Ukrainians getting killed.
Yeah.
Ukrainian soldiers getting killed by Russians.
Right. It was very convenient for Putin that Trump held up the arms aid.
and people get killed.
People are getting killed. Got killed, getting killed, just as they are in Syria as we speak.
You think Trump at night just goes like, you know, in order to win the election, I held up that aid and people got killed. I can't.
No, I don't think so.
Those people are fathers and brothers and sons.
Husbands.
Melania, they're husbands.
They're not in the same room anyway.
Well, he'd go, Melania! Melania!
You'd have to shout very loud.
Melania, I want to discuss something with you. Not now. No, come on. Come on down the hall. And what is it? You know, what I did by shaking down the guy to get the stuff on Biden, I delayed him getting these arms and some Ukrainian soldiers were killed. Am I a bad man, honey? Yes. Very bad.
It's in her contract not to think he's a bad man. I'm joking.
That would be a tough contract to sign. I mean, he's a bad man. I mean, he's a bad man. He's a bad man.
I don't disagree. No, he's a disaster.
I love this. Franken calls Trump bad man. Hey, bad man. Okay.
Drew, I don't disagree. Yeah. Between that and the obstruction, I still see a two-part impeachment.
A two-part?
Article 1 would be the soliciting something of value, which is what he did, in asking him to investigate Biden, soliciting something of value, period, from a foreign country. That's not good. Maybe put China in there, too. And second would be obstruction. I mean, they've just been obstructing across the board. That was one of the articles against Nixon. Now, as you know, I wrote a piece that appeared in the New York Times. I think there should be another article of impeachment. I feel very strongly about it, and I got a very good response to it, which is abuse of power. That was Article 2 for Nixon, and I would make it Article 2 for Trump. I would first do the soliciting something of value, then I would do Article 2, abuse of power, and it's all there.
Article 2, you want obstruction or you want abuse of power?
I'd make obstruction third.
Okay, but obstruction is like ignoring subpoenas? Is that the obstruction?
Well,
or is it the
blocking, trying to block the investigation. And you could also bring in things from the Mueller report.
Yeah, there were a lot of things in the Mueller report
that were obstruction. Just obstruction across the board that he tried. So, but my Article 2, which I think is very important, is abuse of power. You're not going to impeach somebody twice. Once you've done it, you're not going to do it again. And it would be things that we know about. Making money off of the federal government and the taxpayers. Totally flouting
the emoluments clause.
Totally flouting the emoluments clause.
Yeah.
I would put in there threatening to raise postal rates on Amazon, which owns the Washington Post, which he hates. That's abuse of power for a president. He tried to do that. I think it's still caught in a process somewhere. But there's a whole string of things that we know.
Because of Bezos owning.
Right.
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos. There's a whole string of them that I would put in there. And it is abuse of power. And it's the most insidious. It's the scariest thing about, what the president can do. This is what Nixon did. I had people's tax returns audited. They should be careful about how they use their power. So I would put abuse of power in there as number two. As I understand it, Speaker Pelosi is still not for doing that. They want to keep it narrow. Another one would be he usurped the role of Congress by taking appropriations that had been voted for A, and putting it for his wall, for B. And that's the major power of the Congress is the appropriations process. So that's not okay. And if you don't call him on those things, and you're setting the precedence that these are okay? No, you can't do that.
I guess the argument would be that it would just take a long time.
No.
No, okay.
I would have things that are proven that are shown. You don't have to investigate. It's all there. It's all on the record. I wouldn't do anything. You don't need to investigate any of this. You'd have to write it. You and I could write it. It's not hard. Well, we shouldn't. We're not lawyers, but
you know what was great? It's like when I got to the Senate, I remember my first bill was to get this study for how service dogs helped veterans with PTSD. And my staff came in with the bill, and I started rewriting it.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. I said, well, I just want to make it sing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they said, you don't do that. You don't have to do that.
I went like,
oh, good, because that saves me a lot of time. I don't have to rewrite. I did not understand that you just don't like, I want to make this.
It has to be legalese.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Well, you could read Article 2 of the Articles of Impeachment of Nixon, and you'd be perfectly clear. They just listed the things that he did that were abuses of power. We could do the same thing and should do the same thing. Otherwise, you're setting...
And they've all been established. I mean,
that's right.
Okay. And yet, Lindsey Graham and Republicans so far haven't gone like, wow, he's abused his power a lot.
Well, they know it, though. They know it. And I think it helps them in the Senate, because now Lindsey Graham is in his own boat, so to speak. He's so angry over the sellout of the Kurds that we'll see where he ends up. But anyway.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Lindsey Graham is in a place by himself. He worries about being primaried. That is, somebody to his right would challenge him.
He's not by himself in that regard. Republican worries about being challenged from the right.
That wasn't the entire point.
I know, but
he's way over there.
Make that clear to the listener.
That's right. A number of them now, they're more worried about running with him than being primaried. There's a new worry because they're afraid that he's going to cost them votes. So they're not all worried about being primaried, or it is established who the candidate will be. So they don't have to worry about being primaried. Let's put it that way. But some of them are worried about running with him. We'll see. We'll see. You know, almost every day another shoe drops. That's why a Democratic senator, who can't be named, who has a number of friends on the Republican side, that happens, as you know. It's not what people think, but it does happen. You had friends. You have friends on that side. He said to me they're, quote, nervous as hell, because they know this man is so... not accident prone. He just does such stupid things. There's a point. If the impeachment goes through the House and if they bring it up, it will pass. It'll probably be on a party line vote, which is what the White House wants. That's why they're goading them to do a vote now, so they can say, you see, it's just Democrats.
Yeah,
it's just
you can't do
thing.
What you're doing until you have the vote.
Well, but they're making that up.
Right.
But their point is they want to have it be seen as a strictly party-line vote. You see, it's just all a partisan witch hunt.
Right.
It gets over to the Senate, because in the Senate what they do is they convict. The House's impeachment is to indict.
Sure.
So they get convicted in the Senate and are thrown out of office. This has never happened. Yeah. And so Lindsey...
What, do they need two-thirds?
Two-thirds.
Yeah.
But not for the parliamentary things, just majority vote. In any event, he's saying you're going to throw him out of office over a phone call, you see. And so he just reduces it to, so if...
That is the dumbest thing.
Well, it's pretty effective, I think.
Hey, but, listen, Vinny, I want you to kill 26 clams.
Sorry, you've been indicted for murder. Hey, it was just a phone call.
I think... it's not just for now, but for the future. It paints the picture of his presidency. And if you don't call him on these things, are you saying that's okay? You're saying future presidents, go ahead. You're not gonna get called on this. I think that's terribly dangerous.
Yeah. Well, there just seems to be so much. I know what you're saying. You're saying let's just list them. You don't have to go through each one in the trial. You can say in the trial we're just going to prove each one of the charges, but we're not going to go through everything. We're not going to go through the time he ordered McGahn to go to Rosenstein to fire.
I would stay away from
Mueller.
All that. I would stay away. I would actually stay away from the whole Russia and investigation thing. I said maybe pick up some Mueller, but I wouldn't do that.
I think Mueller might be mad at you.
Well, I'm too bad. I'm mad at him too. So we're even.
I'm mad at him too. Why are you mad at him?
Because he blew it. He got so legalistic that the point got lost. But that was his assignment. His assignment was to find crimes. And that's what was wrong with it. We've talked about that. What they do now is not only important for now, it's for posterity. And if you let it go, that somebody comes in and keeps his private business and makes money off of it through his presidency, You've set a terrible precedent. And I just think things like that have to be called on and said, no, this is not acceptable behavior on the part of a president.
Yeah, the fact that he didn't get rid of his business.
That's right.
He's the only one.
He's the only president who's not put everything into private trust.
Yeah. But, I don't know if his sons talk to him about the business.
Oh, come on. And what's the difference? He's making the money off of it. It doesn't make any difference. His sons don't have to be involved in telling the Air Force to, please have him stay at this place in Ireland that's very far away from the less expensive.
That was suspicious.
Suspicious, yes. I would say it was suspicious indeed. Anyway, I just think very bad precedent would be set if they don't do it.
Yeah. He looked at the White House and went, cha-ching, cha-ching. Mm-hmm. That was Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very odd for a guy to look at the White House and go, I know, I'll be president.
Do you remember?
Cha-ching. Okay, so now I get to say why I'm mad at Mueller. And you know it. We've discussed this.
I know.
And you poo-poo it and say, let's not bring it up.
I'm saying he carried out his assignment. It was a bad assignment.
Okay. He says that the Office of Legal Counsel has made this ruling that you can't
indict.
That's right. A sitting president.
Right.
And that's never been tested, as you pointed out.
It's now come up in the courts, though. A district judge a few days ago said this is outrageous. Why is a president above the law? It's never been tested. It's not a law.
But here's the thing. He can say, okay, I'll observe the Office of Legal Counsel just for the sake of observing it. I'm not going to indict him. But he's guilty of these things. I could indict him. I have a case that is rock solid. And so is the job of the House of Representatives to take up these crimes and see if they amount to a reason to impeach him.
Right.
That's what he should have said. Instead, I think he thought Barr. Remember,
yeah.
Barr gave the
lies.
The American people that. The report had said that they had completely cooperated with the investigation.
Collusion, no obstruction. That's what they said.
Yeah, and no collusion on page 2 of the report. It says we're not discussing collusion. Collusion is not a legal, there's no legal definition of collusion, just as there's no definition of being in cahoots.
The problem, sir, was his assignment, which was to find crimes, not misbehavior, not carrying out your duty, nothing like that. He was assigned to find crimes. And on the whole Russia thing, where you know perfectly well that Trump was well aware that Putin, that the Russians were helping him, and he talked to them at that one press conference, but
that was a joke.
Russia, if you're
listening. It wasn't funny. It was not a great joke, but there are jokes.
I don't think it was a joke. They started working on it that night. The Russians started working on it.
They have a horrible sense of humor, the Russians.
They don't have much of one.
They have a horrible sense of humor. It was a joke. The Russians took it literally.
There was not a smile on his face. No, it wasn't a joke. I don't think. Just like China wasn't a joke. The White House says it was a joke, but it wasn't.
Have you ever heard of deadpan comedy?
He's not a deadpan person. He doesn't have a great sense of humor that I've ever detected.
I've never seen him laugh.
No. In any event, what Mueller said about the whole Russia thing is he could not prove in court that they had coordinated. In other words, I would have to write you a letter and saying, look, I'm going to help you with the election, and you're going to write back and say, that's terrific. I'm really pleased. Thank you.
I think
he would have called a crime.
I think it was conspiracy. In other words, I think on page 2 of the report, they said we're using as the measure conspiracy and not collusion.
Because, well, I know not collusion.
Because conspiracy has a legal in
right,
the federal code.
Right.
And as I was saying, you're not going to hear the foreman of a jury saying to the judge, the jury finds the defendant guilty of being in cahoots. You're not gonna hear that, and that's why collusion was not taken up.
You know who first used that word? James Comey, when he was director of the FBI, and I forget where he was testifying, and he said, we are looking into Russia's role and whether there was collusion.
Ah.
That started it.
Well, that gave them a little cover.
But it doesn't matter what the word is. The point is he couldn't find the actual agreement, which was silly, because clearly it went on, but it was he was being very legalistic, and that's how that whole thing got lost. One of the reasons Speaker Pelosi was holding off against impeachment was she said, look at what happened to the Republicans after they impeached Clinton, and there was a Senate trial, and there weren't enough votes to throw him out of office. Now, the Republicans said that, oh, they were impeaching him for obstructing justice. He did tell one lie to the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about sex, they said. Well, it was about sex. It was about his having an off with Monica Lewinsky, not in the Oval Office, but in the little room, the little study that's right off the Oval Office.
Yeah, he lied about that when he was...
Before the grand jury.
Yeah, the grand jury about that.
The
about
point is...
Monica, yeah.
The point is, nobody sane thought that this was worth throwing him out of office for. So the Republicans were so obviously partisan. It was very partisan, and it was rabid, almost. The reason that the Clinton impeachment was unpopular was because people didn't think it was worth throwing him out of office for this. It was ill-founded. And so that's why it was unpopular, and that's why, you know, Newt had to leave, and they lost some seats in the midterms.
They did, yeah.
But that wasn't because of impeachment per se. It was because it just wasn't grounded on anything.
It was a midterm.
That's right.
You always lose seats in the midterm. He was very popular, Clinton, during his impeachment.
That's right.
And that was partly economics. The stock market was going well. The economy was going well.
Well, I think most people thought that was a bad thing to do. It was really unwise. It was stupid. It was foolish. But you don't throw him out of office for it.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, you caught him. I mean, and you did. This started with something completely different, which was Whitewater. And we have had a cabal of people going after him and for years and years.
I remember that so well. I was on MSNBC that day. And, you know, Clinton, his eyes would narrow when he was angry. And he said, finger pointing, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. And my co-host turned to me and said, what do you think? I said, he better be telling the truth, because he wasn't.
But he survived.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Months ago, Dahlia Lithwick and Matt Miller were on, and I was saying, go to an impeachment inquiry now because you want to be able to subpoena people, and you want to get them before you. So it's like Watergate, where people heard what's in the content of the Mueller report. And if you do that, then it won't be during the election, but you got to do it now. If you're going to do it now, is what I said. And they wouldn't agree to that until a few months later. Then Dahlia wrote a piece in Slate.
I wouldn't have agreed either. I didn't think they should have gone early when people were saying it. You had to let a case build, and it, you know, a case presented itself. But the thing is, nobody wants it to be going on in the election year. I think Speaker Pelosi was not thinking Senate, because the wisdom, you know, Washington wisdom can be so sure and so wrong. And the Washington wisdom has been, oh, no Republican would ever vote to convict Trump. Well, I've never believed that that was necessarily true. I always thought that there was a time might come when some, at least Republicans, think he is such a burden to the party, and he's becoming that they find him dispensable. And that's part of the buzz that's going on the Hill. Beneath all this, you know, the Republicans are all united in it. Well, they're not united. Some of them already expressed misgivings about his treatment of the president of Ukraine. So I think that she assumed, and she's a terribly smart woman and a brilliant strategist, I think she just assumed, well, yeah, the House will vote to impeach, but the Senate won't do anything. So
you're saying that she believes that now still?
I don't know. I think she just wasn't thinking Senate. You have to, you know, get that. Anyway, it's not going to go fast because the White House is blocking witnesses. They're going to have to say at some point, okay, we've got enough. Let's go.
I think so, but if the White House is going to drag its feet, it's not going to allow anybody. They're going to have
That's
to go to
I'm
these
saying.
Courts, and these courts are going to have to, it'll be a district court, a circuit court,
right?
And then it'll go to
the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and
where he could win.
Bart O'Kavanaugh will have to.
Well, it's really going to be down to the chief. He's the swing vote. And he's very much of an institutionalist, so we'll see. But I think it'll probably get there. But I don't think they necessarily need to wait for that. They have the material. Unless you want to do a very thorough one, and you don't worry about next year. You get it done by the conventions.
I think, like Watergate, if you get the players in, if mm-hmm. you get the testimony that's riveting.
Again, there was all this dependence on Mueller. Whoa, get him. It's really going to be gangbusters. McGahn's a smart lawyer. I don't think he's... I never thought he was going to spill all. He's not John Dean.
No, but he did testify to the...
Right.
The FBI that the president told him to tell Rosenstein to fire Mueller. That is obstruction.
Right.
So that's simple. I mean, he doesn't have to say anything more than that.
They can just take it right out. I can just read the Mueller report. You know, they don't really need him for that. Anyway.
I'm talking about getting the American people behind it. That's what I'm talking about. And that's what's going to...
Well, then you could take a lot of time, and you could. You could get Barr up there. You get Pompeo up there. They've got a lot of problems.
I think you got to split the difference and do it. This is why I wanted to do it sooner. But I think you have to split the difference and get a few of those people up there after we win that battle that the White House has to obey subpoenas from the co-equal mm-hmm. branch of government.
Well, that's the point. That's why we do have a constitutional collision right here, right before us. Have we done? We haven't done. Well, we did Nixon, sort of.
We did Nixon. I mean, I love.
Well, here's the point
Nixon
of
impeachment. I watched that
was,
every minute.
That was
of that.
A classic impeachment. I think it's worth spending just a little time on. There were various things about it that were just really well handled. Let's take over in the House. You had a new committee chairman, Peter Rodino from New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Then they hired as their chief counsel. John Doerr. John Doerr had worked for the Justice Department under Eisenhower and Bobby Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodino and Doerr and another staff person, they said, no, we're not doing policy here. We're doing the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's very important.
It was very important.
You don't impeach over a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a very different Republican Party then. There were moderates. Remember, there used to be moderate Republicans. There were
Northeastern. There were some
Midwestern
that were liberal.
Too. You know, Tom Rails back from Illinois. You had Southern Democrats then. As the Republicans have taken over the South for now. That could change.
Yeah, they were transitioning then. The transition started.
As of the Civil Rights Bills.
Yeah.
Johnson said, there goes the South, and he was right.
Yeah. Went the South, but...
So they had to win over two groups. They had to win over Southern Democrats, who were conservative Democrats,
mm-hmm.
and they had to win over some Republicans. And they felt from the start that unless it were bipartisan, it wouldn't work. they were fair. They brought a lot of people in on the drawing up of the articles of impeachment, like, you know, my favorite article, Article 2, which, by the way, I should have said earlier, it also held the president accountable for a pattern or practice on the part of his aides. In other words, no winking and nodding. So that's what people are saying, well, did Nixon know about the Watergate break-in? I say, it doesn't matter. It happened under his watch, and they knew what he wanted. So you had a different Republican Party. It was much more moderate.
Yeah, it was.
The current governor of Maryland, Hogan, his father, was the first Republican to vote for impeachment.
Ah.
So they got, in the end, they got Republican votes. That made, they thought the only way it would be acceptable to the public is if it's bipartisan. And this is the problem that the Democrats on the Hill are having now, because you don't have those moderates. You have a couple of them. How they'll vote, I don't know.
But we're more tribal now, more divided than
very
ever
much so.
Before.
As somebody pointed out the other day, I hadn't thought of it before. The midterms, in which the Democrats may gain, what, like 40 seats?
40, yep.
Most of them, I mean, by definition, they won in swing districts.
Right, because they defeated.
So they beat Republicans who would be more open to, you know, enforcing the law.
Oh, that's true. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that before, but it's true. And that's changed the nature of the House Republican Party. So it's a lot tougher now to get that. But that was terribly important.
What would you say was the most dramatic moment of the Watergate hearings?
The hearings or the impeachment procedure?
Hearings.
Well, the most dramatic of the hearings was when Alexander Butterfield said, yes, there are tapes. Now, Fred Thompson, who was the Republican counsel, asked him about it, but he knew the answer. He'd already interviewed him.
Yeah, that was clear. They asked, because the next thing was, is there any chance that conversations were not taped? Butterfield went, no, they taped them all.
This is why when Dean said something, when I was talking to him one time, Dean said, well, I was talking to the president one time, he sort of went behind a curtain to tell me something because he was trying to keep the recorder from overhearing. He knew the recorder was going, but nobody else did. I think Haldeman knew, but no one else knew that there was the recorder there. But I would say the most dramatic thing of the whole process was when they took the first votes on the articles of impeachment. We hadn't ever had this in our lifetimes. And you could, it's cliche, but you literally could hear a pin drop in that room. And nobody smiled. You know, they realized how serious. It was a very,
very
serious thing.
We
throw the word around so much now, but it was terribly serious. And it was incredibly dramatic. After it was over, you know, Rodino's voice cracked when he voted. He went to the back room and cried. I remember it was sort of like 7 o'clock that night when they finished, on Saturday night. And I went out on the Capitol grounds. I sort of cried. I mean, it was a huge, huge moment.
Will you cry if Trump?
I think I'll hold it together.
Okay. That'll be hard for you. I know. It's going to be a tough moment in the Franken household. I know that.
When Clinton was impeached, and our friend called me up and said, well, you know, a British friend who was here called me up. And I said, this is very sad, you know, because he shouldn't have been impeached.
It was stupid.
You know, it's a very, very great thing, which is why I think it should be abroad, because you're showing that this presidency is corrupted.
I agree. And, you know, I mean, think about all the media attention that impeachment got and how inevitable the end was on that.
It didn't seem inevitable at the time. That's the point. And I wrote this in the book that you talked about, my book, Washington Journal.
Washington Journal, reporting Watergate and Richard Nixon's downfall.
That's right.
I like a book that says what it is. Let's wrap up with just a quickie on the press and how they cover this. To me, like during the Clinton impeachment, there was so much press on, to me, so little. There were some, actually, magazines that didn't do that. American Grocer Monthly. Sailing magazine. So you got to just recognize those that didn't fall for it. But what's your opinion of how the media is handling this compared to previous
terms? Well, as you know, I sort of bristle at the term the media because it's all different kinds of people with different agendas, with different philosophies, different points of view. I mean, to say that...
But don't they all have similar pressures on them, or not all, but many?
Different papers have different points of view. Look at Fox. It's divided unto itself.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah. So it depends. I think it depends very much on the reporters and on the management as to what they're looking for. If you want an example of press overdoing it, and I think they admit it, look at how much space the New York Times devoted to Hillary's emails.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of know it now. They went way overboard. It wasn't that big a deal.
It's a nice time for them to realize it. You know, I keep saying that this is the second most important election of our lifetime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The first one was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the New York Times and everyone else kind of blew it
mm-hmm.
by just covering Trump, just cutting to. CNN just would cut to his rallies.
Well, they know that now. And the head of CNN said that was wrong. But he was great showbiz.
I know.
I'm differentiating between the printed press and the television press, but you're absolutely right. He was very entertaining, and so they ran the rallies just, you know, not as reporters, but just gave him wall-to-wall coverage, and that certainly helped him.
Well, hopefully this time.
That was a lot of free advertising.
Yes, and there was no oxygen at all for any of the other Republican candidates, which... But I hope this time that, and it's a long ways from now, and it depends what the timing is on the impeachment, but it would be nice. It would be nice if the mainstream media would cover health care. It would be nice if they covered education.
Well, they certainly did in 2018, or, you know, they certainly broke through his issues. He was sending troops to the border and talking about cavalcades coming and marching on us. It didn't work. And people voted on health care.
That's right. That's right. Because when they had the chance to repeal and replace, they had nothing. And everyone realized it. And then that's when they realized what was in the Affordable Care Act, and including protections that
mm-hmm.
the Republicans weren't going to give them. And people were afraid of, the ACA going and afraid of losing their protection on pre-existing conditions and annual caps and lifelong caps and having your 26-year-old on your insurance and or your 25-year-old, and also losing Medicaid. I mean, I went around rural Minnesota and they were afraid there. Well, Elizabeth, thank you.
We have nothing to talk about.
We have nothing to talk
about? We had nothing to talk about.
Well,
anyway, you were thanking me. I don't want to interrupt you.
Now I don't want to thank you. No, thank you. I mean, this is an honor, and you're a treasure. I just, whenever you would have a piece in The New Yorker, I would just go, oh, good.
Thank you. That's very nice.
I go, oh, good, I can read that, and I don't have to read any fiction.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be on the show. Honored to be on the podcast.
Thank you. We'll do this again when it gets a little bit more heated.
That'd be fun.
And it will get
it
more
will.
Heated.
It will. There's no question about it.
Okay. Let's get out of this squirrel cage, huh?
I had a good time.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Once Upon a Beat.